Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 1, Text Number 22. Vandyakshay katavaishchavayar gadhitam vihitam ashtita vibhat kutapam ashuchir yatayam ashadehina. Translation. This fallen Brahmin, Ajamil, gave trouble to others by arresting them, by cheating them in gambling, or by directly plundering them. This was the way he earned his livelihood and maintained his wife and children. Purport. This verse indicates how degraded one becomes simply by indulging in illicit sex with a prostitute. Illicit sex is not possible with a chaste aristocratic woman, but only with unchaste sudras. The more society allows prostitution and illicit sex, the more impetus it gives to cheaters, thieves, plunderers, drunkards, and gamblers. Therefore, we first advise all the disciples in our Krishna conscious movement to avoid illicit sex, which is the beginning of all abominable life, and which is followed by meat-eating, gambling, and intoxication, one after another. Of course, restraint is very difficult, but it is quite possible if one fully surrenders to Krishna, since all these abominable habits gradually become distasteful for a Krishna-conscious person. If illicit sex is allowed to increase in a society, however, the entire society will be condemned, for it will be full of rogues, thieves, cheaters, and so forth. Om Agyan Timirandasya Ginangina Shalakaya Chuksur Unmilitam Jainatasmai Sivirave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jaina Bhutale Shwayam Rupakadamayam Tadantisvabhanantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasahi Gaurava Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram. So we're continuing with the story. We won't say pastime because pastime is something transcendental. This is a story, although it's a true story. It's a story, it's not a pastime. At least in the part of the fall down of this personality called Ajamil. As we hear from Srimad Bhagavatam, Ajamil was born in a Brahmana family, which means he had all good opportunity for progressing in spiritual life. One takes birth in a particular family as a result of one's pious or impious activities. Nothing happens by chance in this world. It is stated that not even a blade of grass moves without the will of the Supreme. So one's birth is ascertained according to one's past activities. If one is born in a poor country, in a low-class family, with no opportunity for education, constantly plagued by different types of diseases, etc., this means that in a previous lifetime, one acted impiously. Whereas if one is born in a very wealthy family with an opportunity for good education, one's bodily features are beautiful or handsome, etc., this means that one had performed pious activity in a previous lifetime. Of course, the most fortunate birth is to take birth in a family of transcendentalists, either Brahmins or Brahmin Vaishnavas, because this gives one the greatest opportunity, which is to revive one's dormant sense of Krishna consciousness, one's dormant sense of love of God, and go back home, back to Godhead. But as we can see from the life of Ajamil, even such a birth does not guarantee that one can achieve such perfection. One has to take advantage of that good birth. Just like in Krishna consciousness, we have also achieved a very rare birth. Of course, no one can be proud of their material birth. Anyone sitting in this room can be proud of their material birth. But by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, we have been reborn as well. As the Christians sometimes say, to be reborn, the born-again Christians. We have also been reborn How is that? Pramanda Bhamati Kon Bhagivan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasad Pai Bhakti Lata Beej. We were wandering throughout the material creation, taking our birth in different species of life. But somehow or other, by the combined mercy of Guru and Krishna, we have achieved this rare opportunity for Krishna consciousness. We were not born, due to our pious activity, in a Brahmin family or in a Vaishnava family, but rather we were born in degraded Malecha or Yavana or perhaps Rakshasa families. We were born in families that were addicted to meat eating, to sinful activity, etc. But by the mercy of a pure devotee, Srila Prabhupada, we have had this opportunity to take birth in the family of ISKCON. Prabhupada often referred to ISKCON as a family, a spiritual family. So we also have the same opportunity as those who performed pious activities in previous lifetimes and took birth in, for example, India. We have the same opportunity, although we are Westerners, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. But just as birth in a Brahmin family does not guarantee one's success, similarly, one's spiritual rebirth in a society like the International Society for Krishna Consciousness does not necessarily guarantee one perfection. Because we see, as in the life of Ajamil, he performed his brahminical activities for some time, but for one reason or another, he was distracted from the path, and he fell down and became Dvijabandhu. Dvijabandhu means he became fallen. Dvijabandhu means the fallen brahmanas. He became fallen, and he gave up his practice and lost all his spiritual credits, although he was born in a Brahmin family. So although we have also been reborn in a spiritual family simply by the mercy of a pure devotee like Srila Prabhupada, a pure devotee like Srila Prabhupada has the potency to uplift even conditioned souls. Bhaktivinoda Thakur once stated that one can judge the advancement of a devotee by how many other persons he can influence in devotional service. He can encourage to take up the process of devotional service. So Srila Prabhupada came to Western countries, and by his great desire, he initiated 5,000 disciples. Prabhupada had 5,000 disciples. And many others also were inclined to either chant or take prasadam, visit a temple, and that process is still going on. So Prabhupada is such a powerful spiritual personality. So we have been reborn by his grace. The seed of Krishna consciousness has been planted in our heart. But unless we sow that seed properly, water that seed properly, then like Ajamil, we can also be distracted from the path of pure devotional service and lose the spiritual credits that we have gained in this very short time. So the life of Ajamil is very instructive. We should not think ourselves necessarily more advanced than Ajamil. We should not think like that. A devotee actually is very humble. Chinata pisa nichina, tora pisa hisnana, amanina manadena, kirtani yad sada hari. Devotee always considers himself in a fallen condition. And by thinking himself in a fallen position, he's always very careful with his spiritual life. If one thinks himself to be advanced, he will not be very careful to guard against the obstacles of devotional service. But if one thinks himself not advanced, in other words, if one is in a humble position, then he'll always be on guard against the tricks of Maya, or the illusions of Maya. He'll always be very careful. He'll never let his guard down. It's like when you're boxing. The other day we had a wrestling competition, and I was thinking, next time we can have boxing competition. No gloves. We wouldn't do that. But boxing, when you're boxing, then you're fighting your opponent, you could never let your guard down even for a moment. Never for a moment. You can't let your guard means you can't put your arms down. Right? The boxers are covering all the weak points here. especially the solar plexus. This is a point right here. If you think you're a good boxer, you just cover your face, then you're in for a surprise, because they'll punch you right in the solar plexus here. This is all your... You can never let your guard down. When I was in school, in high school, as part of our physical education, in our senior year, we had a boxing course, and I wasn't really into it. But we all had to fight. We had to get up and fight. But I wasn't paying attention in the classes, and I was always, you know, fooling around. And then it came time. They had sent us out by twos onto the ring there. We had to fight. So the boy that I had to fight was, like, really good. He was, like, you know, everyone knew in the class he was, like, going to win the whole thing. So I had to go out and fight, and I felt very unsure of myself. And they all thought I was going to lose because I was fooling around during all the classes. So we came out to box, and we started punching like that. And I just was closing my eyes. And because of that, this boy became a little overconfident. He thought, oh, he can beat me up because just, you know, I didn't know anything about boxing, really. So he just kind of, you know, put his arm like that. And then I just went, closed my eyes. I just, and I punched him right here in the solar plexus. He went down for the count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Suddenly I was the winner. But why? Only because that boy became overconfident. He became overconfident. He kind of let his guard down like that. And just out of good luck only, I happened to hit him at the right place. And he went down, and down for the count. So though he was much more qualified than me, because he became puffed up, he lost all his qualifications. He was a loser. So in Krishna consciousness, we have to always maintain the mentality, Trinada Pisanichana, Tora Pisahistana, Amanina Manadena, Kirtani Yad Sadahari. That is, that one should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking himself lower than the straw on the street, more tolerant than the tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and ready to offer all respects unto others, expecting none for oneself. In other words, we have this wonderful opportunity to advance in Krishna consciousness. And by the combined mercy of Srila Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya, devotees are making progress in Krishna consciousness. We don't deny that. We don't want to deny the fact that we are making progress. That would be to deny the very potency of the holy name. To say that we're not making advancement. Oh, I'm very humble. I'm not making any advancement. You're making advancement by the mercy of the holy name, by the mercy of the spiritual master. But we shouldn't be proud of that and let our guard down. We should acknowledge advancement, but we should be very humble and give the credit to whom credit is due, to Guru and Krishna, and use that advancement in their service. So Ajamil, he was born in a Brahmin family, and he, of course, we can understand in those days the society was very strict. He was obviously practicing nicely. But as we hear from Srimad Bhagavatam, one day he was walking on the path, and he happened to see what? He happened to see a man and a woman embracing in a passionate way, amorous embrace, loving, lusting embrace. And as a result of seeing a man and a woman engaged in this lusty activity of embracing and kissing, his mind became agitated. And he eventually gave up his spiritual practices because of his agitated mind. And he searched after female companionship in the form of a prostitute. And because he engaged in illicit sex with the prostitute and somehow or other decided to marry her, and to maintain her, he engaged in all types of illicit activities like cheating and gambling and plundering people, etc. He became the most fallen personality. From the highest, he became the lowest. As they say, the bigger they are, the harder they fall. So he was elevated, but because he allowed his guard to come down, he became agitated by seeing a couple engaging in illicit sex. He became very much disturbed and fell down from his spiritual practice. So this in itself is a warning. And Prabhupada mentions it here, especially this illicit sex. Illicit sex means, of course, sexual activity outside of marriage and in marriage only for the propagation of children. Very strict definition. And Prabhupada said, of course, such restraint is extremely difficult. It's extremely difficult. It's extremely difficult for brahmacharis who are not married, and it's difficult for householders who are married to uphold this very strict regulation that sex is only allowed in marriage for the conception of a child. This is not only strict for brahmacharis, but this is also a very strict injunction for householders, because householders are living together. A man and a woman are living together, so certainly the possibilities are there for sexual contact. So how is it possible that one can remain fixed in Krishna consciousness and not become deviated from the path by this most attractive allurement of the material energy, sex desire? How is it possible? The whole world is going on in this business. And Ajamil, you could say that our situation in modern society, the stage of Kali Yuga, is even more precarious than it was Ajamil. Because Ajamil, he happened to see just one incident like this. And it probably wasn't very, you know, risque. Probably just a little embrace and a little kiss on the cheek or something, I don't know. But nowadays, when you walk down the street, this illicit sex is glorified at every step. Therefore, padam padam yad vipadam natesham. There's certainly danger at every step. Now that we see that the cold weather has finished and the hot weather has come, then we see that people are, you know, they have less clothes on than they had during the winter time. So as we get into summer, it becomes more of a challenge for the mind of the transcendentalist as we try to go out on Harinam and distribute the holy names. People are not shy or embarrassed about this fact at all. In Vedic age, people were trained in shyness and chastity, and therefore the members of society were protected. But nowadays, as the summer comes, all clothes off. And it becomes a more difficult situation for the transcendentalist. So, it appears that our chances of falling down are even greater than Ajamil, because the agitation for sex desire is very prominent in Kali Yuga, very prominent in modern society. How then can one control the mind and remain chaste and remain fixed up? Well, as Prabhupada points out, this fact that such restraint is very difficult, in the same breath, he gives us the solution. In the same breath. It is always the duty of the spiritual master to point out the nature of the material world and to give us the positive alternative. The devotee is very expert at seeing Maya's tricks. He's trained. He's trained by Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu to see the tricks of Maya. He's not naive. He sees them. We study the material energy for that purpose and for that purpose only, to see what are the tricks of Maya so we don't become entangled in her network of illusion. But at the same time, we have the always are given the positive alternative so we don't become disparate. Daviyesha gunamai mama maya duratyaya. Even God himself says this divine energy of mind, the material energy, consisting of the three modes of material nature, Krishna says, is very difficult to overcome. But in the same breath, Krishna says, but those who surrender unto me, they can easily overcome it. So Guru is the same. Guru is nothing more, nothing less than the humble servant of the Lord. He is the Lord's representative. So he repeats the Lord's philosophy. So Prabhupada's saying the same thing in the same breath. He's pointing out the difficulty of restraining the senses in Kali Yuga, but then he says, but it is quite possible if one fully surrenders to Krishna. Why? Because all these abominable habits, and it is an abominable habit, the desire for illicit sex, to enjoy the material body of the opposite sex, all these abominable habits gradually become distasteful for a Krishna-conscious person. So the same, Prabhupada's saying the same thing. Krishna's saying, this divine energy of mind consisting of the three modes of material nature is very difficult to overcome, but one who surrenders unto me can easily overcome it. And Prabhupada is saying, of course, restraint is very difficult, but it's quite possible for one who fully surrenders to Krishna. It's the same. This is the qualification of Guru, that he repeats the philosophy of Krishna with realization. So we have this great challenge upon us to resist the temptation of our attraction, not only for the opposite sex, but there are other sinful activities which naturally follow illicit sex, such as intoxication, meat eating, and gambling. They follow each other, one after another. Just like surrender to Krishna. By surrendering to Krishna, then naturally one develops all good spiritual qualities. Just by that act of surrender to Krishna, by bowing down before Krishna, naturally one gradually develops all good spiritual qualities. Titikshava karunika suridam sarvadehinam achuta sattva santa sattva sadabhushanaha. One naturally develops. So by surrendering to the illusory energy, one bad quality follows another. Prabhupada mentions here that from illicit sex comes intoxication, comes meat eating, and comes gambling. In other words, if one can control this one urge to lustily devour the opposite sex, then it will be much easier to control the tendencies towards intoxication, towards meat eating and gambling, if we can just conquer this one desire. How is it that these other illicit activities follow what Prabhupada describes as the most illicit activity? He says if illicit sex is allowed to increase in a society, the entire society becomes condemned. So how is it that from illicit sex, people become more degraded, and with the degradation of the individuals of society, society itself becomes degraded because society is composed of individuals? Well, I heard on a tape one time Prabhupada described this phenomenon. He said there is the contact of the man and the woman. And how do they enjoy? How do they enjoy their illicit activity? Well, naturally they go to one nightclub or they go to one bar. And what do you do there to enjoy with the opposite sex? Then you drink liquor. Practically every function in modern society, which is based on this concept of I am the body and life is meant for enjoyment, especially with the opposite sex. In every function, there's lech beer. People are actually surprised when they come to our Hare Krishna festival and they see there's no beer. They can't imagine a festival without drinking alcohol. In their mind, it's just, they cannot conceive of becoming happy without the artificial stimulus of alcohol in the blood. You just can't become happy unless you can't become relaxed, you can't become peaceful, you can't become happy, you can't become you know, ecstatic, which means when you pass out from drinking too much alcohol, you can't become, there's no function where they don't drink alcohol. And in this country that you see everywhere, the blue, or rather the green and the yellow sign, Lekbir. When I was designing our tents, which we just got the other day, our two tents, my first inclination, you know, he said, what colors do you want? I said, oh, I think green and yellow would be, it's a bright, happy color, so let's have green and yellow for our festivals. And the guy kind of looked at me, green and yellow? Someone else is using green and yellow. I went, oh yeah, like beer. The green and yellow is the sign for the that famous beer of this country. And you see it everywhere. Even on this hotel, there's a little sign just outside the front entrance there. A big round sign says Lek Beer in green and yellow. And all the umbrellas, as you drive to the towns, the umbrellas, you see the big umbrellas like that, green and yellow. So every function that they have this because when the man and woman come together and to increase their passionate desires, they drink liquor. Liquor helps them appears to overcome the, break the ice, so to speak, false ego, and they relax, and it becomes easier to exploit each other. So they have these, and then you drink, naturally, the men, I'll take a glass of wine, I'll take some champagne, a martini, please, some vodka, like this. And then they eat the meat. Prabhupada said they're eating the meat. In order to digest the meat, they have to drink the wine or the liquor. He's described it like that. To digest this meat, they have to drink the liquor. The alcohol helps digest. That's how Prabhupada described it. And so the relationship goes on. And then to maintain this illicit affair, because the desires increase unlimitedly, it's not possible to simply, you know, in a material relationship like that, mundane relationship, woman is called Shtri, which means she who increases one's material possessions. And man is very happy to work for that, to increase the material possessions. Together they get entangled like this. And so many desires that you cannot support those desires in a honest way. Because there's unlimited desires and they're never satisfied, they have to resort to illegal means of acquiring money. That's what happens. If you just live a very simple life, simple living with high thinking, you really don't need so much money to maintain it. If you live a simple life and you engage the balance of your time in cultivating Krishna consciousness, you really don't have to work so hard. You need a roof over your head, you need some warm clothes, you need the basic foodstuffs, etc. If a person could live a very simple, but you can't live a simple life unless you have the higher taste of Krishna consciousness. It's not possible. You won't be satisfied with those simple basic necessities. You'll want more and more and more and more. And then it becomes impossible to maintain all those desires, so you have to do a little cheating on the side. People are always cheating. They're always trying to cheat the government, especially who's taking their hard-earned money, their taxes. So they try to avoid paying their taxes, and sometimes they're discovered, and the government fines them a very heavy penalty or puts them into jail for not paying their taxes, or they're cheating on some business, or they're doing some black market or something. So many people like that. Why? Because they have so many desires. Those desires are increased in one's association with the opposite sex, because sex life is never satisfied. This is the irony of the whole thing. A man and a woman come together in thinking that in an illicit way they will satisfy each other's senses, but they're never satisfied. It's not that by having sexual intercourse then one is pacified for the rest of one's life. No. Within some period of time, the passionate desires become even stronger. So again and again and again and again, one engages in this activity, but he's never pacified. So to maintain that activity, which means a whole phantasmagoria of clothes and cars and makeup and, you know, sports and this whole phantasmagoria. One has to work very hard. And to maintain that status quo, sometimes you have to cheat. You may even have to steal. Just like a junkie, he has a habit of taking drugs. So it's very expensive. Heroin is a very expensive thing. So to maintain that habit, he has to steal. He becomes a thief. He breaks into people's houses. And he may approach someone on the street with a gun to attack them like this. So that's, of course, is the extreme. But to maintain their unlimited desires of sense gratification, which come as a result of illicit connection with the opposite sex, sometimes people have to resort to criminal activity. Otherwise, what is the need for a police force? There's a huge police force in every country, a huge network of policemen. Why? That indicates the cheating propensity within people, which comes when they're not... Their material desires are not fulfilled, and they have to resort to criminal activity to maintain their material desires. That's the gambling. So there's the illicit sex, and you could say, you could put it in this order, illicit sex, then wining and dining, taking to the restaurant, eating the meat, to digest the meat, they have to drink the liquor, and to maintain the whole show, the grand show, they have to engage in gambling or cheating to maintain. So this whole society falls down because of this principle of illicit sex. This is how Prabhupada is very poignantly, very graphically describing in this particular purport. So the point is that one can save oneself so much trouble if one can avoid this illicit way of life, beginning with illicit sex. People are thinking that it's a punishment to have to follow these strict rules and regulations. But Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita that these rules, these regulations, he says they are the regulative principles of freedom. This is how he describes having to follow these rules of restraining one's association with the opposite sex, refraining from intoxication, giving up gambling and meat eating. Krishna describes them as the regulative principles. They're regulating us. They're disciplining us. But he said, what is the result? Freedom. Da, 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 da. Freedom. One becomes free. So when we encourage the devotees in these type of principles, devotees shouldn't think that it's some type of punishment or restraint. Oh, the men have to wear dhotis now all the time, except when they're working. Even in the kitchen, they have to wear dhotis. To dress properly, keep the tilak on. Ladies have to dress in saris, cover their heads. It's not a punishment. It's a regulative principle of freedom. Because from one's attraction to the opposite sex, one gradually becomes degraded. That is the purport. One gradually becomes degraded. So in our own interest, so we can live a simple life and not become distracted by all these nonsense things. Rather, we can focus on our Krishna consciousness and not become distracted like Ajamil. Ajamil was probably doing pretty good. But there was some girl walking by and some man met her and then they embraced and then his mind became distracted and one thing led to another. So to protect ourselves from this type of thing, we dress properly. Women dress properly so the men's minds don't become agitated. Men dress properly so the ladies' minds don't become agitated. You may think, oh, it's not a very big thing. But it wasn't a big thing that a man and a woman were embracing. But it was a big thing in the mind of Ajamil. And one thing led to the other. So that this whole inauspicious chain of events doesn't take place, we prevent it from happening altogether by being very simple in our ways, very chaste in our ways, not allowing Maya even the slightest chance to enter into our minds. Well, you can say, oh, that's very nice in the temple. Girls' heads are covered. Boys are dressed in dhoti. But as soon as we get off the bus, you know, there's no hard and fast rules out there. Lord Chaitanya said there's no hard and fast rules for chanting the holy name. So the karmis have no hard and fast rules as to the way they dress. So what is the hope? You know, we're only in the temple for a couple hours a day, but then, you know, as soon as we're out on the street, the ladies don't cover their heads on the streets. The men don't dress properly on the streets. What is our hope? What's the use? We can practice at home, but as soon as we get outside, what to do? Well, what are we doing when we're out there? We only go out there for one reason. We don't go out there to get their association, like most people go out, to get the association of the opposite sex. What do we go out for? We go out to give our association. That's the point. If you go out there for that purpose, you'll taste the higher nectar. If that is your motivation, then you will get a higher taste, and you'll see these other things, and you'll spit at the thought. If you're going out there with the right motivation, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, when will my compassion for all fallen souls manifest? And with a lowly heart, I will go out to preach the divine command. If you have strong Krishna consciousness as a result of your sadhana and your internal reflections, meditation on Krishna consciousness and Srila Prabhupada's mission, then when you go out there, you won't be going out there like they're going out there to enjoy. You'll be going out there to give Krishna consciousness. And because that is your motivation, Krishna will protect you. We're not strong enough to protect ourselves. We're still neophytes. We're like Ajamil. We're probably not even as advanced as Ajamil was. He'd been practicing Krishna consciousness in a very strict Vedic culture. We just came to Krishna consciousness a few years ago, and due to our past bad habits, our internal position is quite weak. So it's difficult for one to really control oneself, although Krishna says we should control the lower self with the higher self. We're cultivating that. We're gradually cultivating that. But ultimately, who protects the devotee? Krishna. Krishna says, for my devotee, I am the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death. He also says, yogakshemam bahamyaham. For my devotee, I protect what he has or she has, and I provide what he or she needs. That means we're all very dependent. If someone's protecting you and someone's providing for you, that means you're very dependent upon that person. So we are very dependent upon Krishna. And if Krishna sees that we have the right motivation, that we want to advance in Krishna consciousness, not for the purpose of becoming a famous devotee, a great devotee, we want to advance so that we can please our spiritual master and serve the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And if we go out with that mentality, then Krishna will protect us. Krishna will protect us. Protect his devotee. Declare it boldly, Arjuna. My devotee is never vanquished. Even amidst the greatest odds, if one has the right motivation, which is humble service to Guru and Krishna, if that is why one is in the Krishna conscious movement, then you'll receive the divine protection of the Lord. Otherwise, if that protection was not there, even Arjuna would have been vanquished. Arjuna was known as the greatest bowman, the greatest archer. But on the other side, the Kauravas, there were many famous archers as well. Combined together, their strength was superior to the strength of Arjuna. Although individually he was the greatest archer. And then if you also consider Karna, Karna was the first son of Kunti. And he was born from the sun god. He was born with natural armor. He had natural armor all over his body. And although he was known as a son of a carpenter, that was just, well, we'll hear that story from Prahlad, or else we already heard that story, how that happened, how Kunti was shy, so she put him in a basket and he floated down the river. He was taken up by the carpenter family, so they thought he was a Sudra, but actually he was the most powerful of Kshatriyas. Some say even more powerful than Arjuna. But how was it that Arjuna was able to fight personalities like Karna and Bhishma, grandfather Bhishma, and so many Kauravas? And how was it possible that Arjuna, who Prabhupada describes as a minnow is a little fish like this, like you can see in the lake here if you go and look, the little minnows, the little tiny fish. They're so cute, they all come together and swim around. And he was compared to a minnow in an ocean of sharks. How was he successful? Because God was on his side, Krishna. He was the friend of Krishna. He was the devotee. He was the servant of Krishna. So Krishna protect. Declare it boldly, Arjuna, my devotee will never be vanquished. So we have many enemies, and perhaps even greater enemy than an entire army, like the Kauravas or the Chinese army or whatever, if you had to fight alone. Perhaps even a greater enemy is the enemy of sex desire. Because that enemy, the Kauravas or the Chinese army or the Serbian army, whatever it is, they can kill you and then finished. But sex desire goes with you. It's in the subtle body. Desires are there in the subtle body. It goes with you birth after birth after birth after birth. It's actually a perverted reflection of our original desire to love Radha and Krishna. That original desire to love Radha and Krishna becomes perverted in the form of attraction to the opposite sex. And that desire takes us from body to body to body. There's no reason to take birth in this world unless you have a material desire. Once the material desires are finished, there's no need for birth again. Finish the material desires, liberation. So this is our greatest enemy, this perverted reflection of love for Radha and Krishna in the form of our attraction to the opposite sex, because it causes us to take birth for 9 months in the womb of a new mata to prepare ourselves for our illicit activity in this world, our independence in this world. As a result of that, we get the body, and the body gets diseased, the body grows old, and we have to experience death. We have not yet, we've experienced birth, we've experienced disease, old age is coming, but we have yet to experience death. Death is such a horrible thing. It's there waiting for all of us. We have to be tolerant one more time. Death will not be a very pleasant experience. Why? Because of this perverted reflection of our love for Radha and Krishna. So it must be overcome. And it can be overcome by making real progress in Krishna consciousness, getting a genuine taste for the holy name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare. It can be controlled by acting according to our cultural values. It can be controlled by discipline. It can be controlled by study of the Shastra, understanding the illusory nature of this world, the false attraction of a man for a woman or a woman for a man, remaining chaste and pure. These things are all helpful. But ultimately, it depends on Krishna's mercy. Prabhupada said, it's quite possible if one fully surrenders to Krishna, because all these abominable habits become gradually purified for one who gets the higher taste of Krishna consciousness. So we have, as we just repeat one more time, we have a more daunting task even than Ajamil, who just walked outside and happened to see something that was very unusual in Vedic culture, man and a woman embracing. We're going down the street and you see these things at every step of the way. So how is it possible? It's possible by surrendering and chanting to the holy name properly, associating with each other, developing deep Vaishnava relationships, following the proper etiquette, dressing properly, speaking properly, relating properly, even the way we take prasadam. We take prasadam in the proper consciousness that will purify our mind. Everything we do, every little detail of what we do has the purpose of keeping us fit in Krishna consciousness and helping us advance in Krishna consciousness. Ultimately, All our success in Krishna consciousness depends upon pleasing Guru and Krishna. If they are pleased, then they will facilitate our advancement. So we have to go out and see all this nonsense. But if we're going out for the right purpose, to serve Prabhupada's mission, to distribute the chanting of Hare Krishna according, then we can even go to the most abominable, degraded place and remain equipoised. The beaches. They're thinking that this is the quintessence of, you know, they're enjoying in this modern civilization. You can just go to the beach and just, you know, swim and practically not dressed. This is the hellish planets for a transcendent. You can imagine any yogi in the Himalayas, coming out of the Himalayas and going down to, you know, Khobje and walking on the beach. He would consider that was the last place in the world he would even consider going, on the beach. He would immediately think this is spiritual suicide. He'll fall down from his great penances and austerities. That's why they're in the Himalayas, to avoid such situations. Here we are, walking into such situations on a regular daily basis. A regular daily function. Bhaktisananda Saraswati Thakur said, we should hear the Brahma Samhita as a regular daily function. Yes, and as part of our regular daily function, we're going on to the beaches, which the yogis would, you know, avoid at all costs. How is it possible? Panam drishta nivarantande. Higher tastes of chanting. We're going on that beach to do what? Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. And if we absorb ourselves in that kirtan, we relish the kirtan of the holy name. It brings to mind Krishna's lila, lila shmaranam. And we're happy to see those poor, unfortunate, naked lizards. Like a lizard also likes to bask in the sun. All those poor people getting skin cancer, increasing the bodily concept of life, becoming more absorbed in the concept that I am the body. We feel sorry for you poor people. You're attached to the body. What is the body? It's a bag of organs and muscles and nerves and blood. And you're attached to that. You can be attached to the divine form of the darling of Yasoda, Krishna. Take this holy name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. And you see those people, even in that hellish condition, become enlivened in Krishna consciousness. They come forward and they see, oh yes, Hare Krishna, Hare. They see the celestial dancing, the dancing of Vaikuntha, the Bharatanatyam. They're in hell, they're seeing that the dance which gopis do in the spiritual sky. They're seeing the Lord's pastime, the puppets, the Ramayana. They're hearing the holy names. They're even hearing some philosophy in hell. They're getting elevated in hell. We're bringing them back to Godhead by dancing, by singing, by philosophy, sometimes prasad there. It is stated that the residents of hell once heard the holy names of Krishna and gradually ascended to Vaikuntha. So that we are doing by going on these streets and by going on the beaches. If we go with that motivation, to dance to attract them to Krishna, to chant to attract them to Krishna, to speak to attract them to Krishna, then our minds will not be diverted, deviated even for a moment. Not even for a moment. If we go out with this, if we go out there preparing ourselves spiritually and going out there with the right motivation, then Krishna will protect us. And what's more, even more than Krishna, that's amazing that we're protected in such an environment. What's more is that by our motivation to please Guru and Krishna, these people will also become spiritually advanced. They'll also chant. They'll dance with us, right? After then, there's the chain, right? They start dancing, Shamalaki and Garangi last year. They're taking the hands of all the little girls and boys. And what is that? That's marked down by Krishna. Prabhupada said, you just chant Krishna's name one time. He writes it down. He tracks you down birth after birth till he makes you a devotee. So these people are actually entering in, mysteriously they're entering into the Sankirtan party of Lord Chaitanya. The party of Lord Chaitanya is passing by, sweeping everyone up in this ecstasy of devotional service. Gross men and women, malechas, yavana, rakshanas, rakshasas. Rakshanas coming. Hobgoblins, ghosts, witches, pishtats, all these inauspicious things. They're all being swept up like a vacuum cleaner, a transcendental vacuum cleaner. Without mercy, it just goes across the floor. Anything in its path, sucked up into the vacuum cleaner. This transcendental vacuum cleaner is going down the beach, sucking all these people up into the trans, sweeping all these people up into the Sankirtan party of Lord Chaitanya, spitting them out the other side, completely transformed and changed, their lives never to be the same again. Don't think it's any small thing when people repeat the Maha Mantra. Don't think it's anything small thing when the little kids, and even some of the times their mothers and their grandfathers, they come in the kirtan party and start chanting with the devotees. They don't know what's happening, but either do we. We're still pretty new. We don't really know what's happening when we chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. We're not so far down the path that we understand the whole intricacies of the holy name. We chant because we have a little faith. They also chant because that kirtan party creates a little faith. So they come in for whatever reason it is and they chant it. But it's working, purifying, cleansing, 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 cleansing. So we have to go out and perform that kirtan at all odds. Even it becomes becoming more difficult now. Just yesterday I received information from Toda Gopinath, that one of our best festivals was canceled. The one we were supposed to perform, not this weekend, but the next weekend. One of the ones I was looking forward to. The mayor was in favor, the town council voted in favor, but then the local priests, they found out about it, and for 3 days they sent messages and faxes and emails and went together to the mayor and the houses of each member of the town council and protested strongly, don't let Hare Krishna come to our town and brainwash our children. So the other day when Toda went there to make the final preparations, the mayor said, I'm sorry, there's no festival. This is the greatest calamity. Mr. Voivoda, there's not going to be a festival? This is enough to bring tears to the eyes of any sincere Vaishnava. It's so many thousands of people in that town will now lose the chance, perhaps for millions of years. Perhaps they won't come in contact with the holy name, they won't come in contact with the Vaishnavas, they won't come in contact with the book, Prasadam. So many of those people, it'll take millions of years until they again have the opportunity. This is, for a Vaishnava, his unhappiness is to see people bereft of Krishna consciousness, and his happiness is to see people with Krishna consciousness. Very sad situation. And it's getting harder. It's getting harder up north to get schools. In Koshalin, nobody would rent us a school this year. No sect. We don't want any sect. The school we used to go to, the new director, that one we always stay in Koshalin every year after year for 9 years, we came there this year, sorry, no sects. They don't want a sect. So we have some school, smaller, less convenience, it's going to be more austere, some other place, some outside. It's becoming harder and harder and harder and harder. But shall we give up? No, because this is our duty. One cannot give up duty because duty is a little inconvenient or austere or difficulty. We have a debt to Srila Prabhupada. We have a debt to our previous acharyas. So if we're responsible in paying our debts, both to Asmaratya, Marichi, and Śrīdhara Prabhupāda in our previous disciplic successions, if we have this mood of that our lives are their lives now because they have blessed us with this Krishna consciousness, we are their servants forever, whatever they desire we will do. If we have this mood, we go out and preach, surely such devotees will be protected. Surely such devotees will be protected. There may be struggle, but that will make the victory even sweeter. If there's no struggle and we take everything as too easy, then we never really surrender. We never really draw from our spiritual practices. We never chant with real attention, with real dependence upon Krishna, if it's too easy. Krishna makes it hard for a reason, so that we can fully surrender, and then we make advancement. So these challenges are actually Krishna's mercy. We shouldn't retreat, but we should go forward. There may be many challenges as the spring tour goes on and we go into the summer. We may find, but we should not become discouraged. We should not become weakened in our resolution or determination. Become fixed on pushing forward the Sankirtan movement. And that greater desire will overwhelm what is a great desire in this world, desire for association with the opposite sex. That's a great desire. But the greatest desire is the disciple's desire to please his spiritual master. That is much more powerful than sex desire. We can only overcome sex desire by our intense desire to please Guru and Krishna. And one who has that determination, then he can easily conquer over these other desires. Spirit is much more powerful than matter. The greatest material desire is insignificant to a true spiritual desire. Prabhupada came to America armed with only two things, his faith and following the instruction of Bhaktisananda Saraswati Thakur to preach in an English-speaking language, and his attraction to the holy name. With that, those two things, he conquered the whole world. So the odds are against us in a materialistic point of view. Ajamil just saw one couple, we're seeing many couples, but we don't have to be deviated, we don't have to fall down, we can make nice progress all the way back home, back to Godhead, when we take up the missionary spirit of Krishna consciousness as demonstrated, as taught to us and demonstrated, not only by Śrīla Prabhupāda, but by God himself. Lord Chaitanya Mahāprabhu came into this world as the missionary spirit. 5,000 years ago, he came in the enjoying spirit. He was in Vrindavan with his devotees. But the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahāprabhu were specifically in the missionary spirit. He had three leelas, his Adi Leela, his Madhi Leela, and his Antu Leela. The majority of them were in the preaching mood. So we will also maybe have our Antu Leela at the end of our lives, quote unquote. We can't say it's real Leela, but we may have time, by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, to have a few extra moments to sit under a desire tree in Vrindavan and chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare. But the balance of our life should be this preaching work. That will qualify us to sit under the tree and with an unagitated mind do real Leela Smarana, remembrance of the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. Grantharaj Shrimad Bhagavatam Aki Shri Prabhupada Aki Harinam Sankirtan Yagya Aki Gaura Premanandi.